name. Jim, can you take this and give the names to people so they can put them wherever they're sitting? They're on both sides. Some people can sit on this side, some over here. It doesn't matter where. And some people can grab some chairs if there aren't enough at the table. There are some over by the sounds, technical things over there. Also, Dan and Verna could come up to the table. We'll just make room for everyone. I know it's a little unusual. It's a little out of the ordinary of the way things used to run, but we're actually going to make room for everyone. Okay? I don't know how, but we haven't known how we're going to do a lot of things yet, and we're doing them. So we're going to make room here. My name is Leslie Kagan. Thank you. Some people have been getting a little confused, and they think I'm the interim chair of the board. I'm actually the chair of the interim board. Just so we're clear. Also, just to be clear, I am not the chairman of the board. I am the chair of the board. Let me clarify that further, especially to my sisters and brothers on the board. If anybody tries to get my attention to be recognized by calling me Madam Chair or Chairman, I will not recognize you. My name is Leslie. Call me Leslie. Thank you. Okay, again, we're starting a little late, and I'm doing a little filler as people get seated up here. I also want to welcome people here, not only the board members who will all take a moment and introduce themselves, but also the folks who came out from the Los Angeles area who are here tonight, as well as I know people are here from New York and Berkeley, and I believe and hope from Washington and Houston as well. We welcome you all here. And I also want to welcome those people who are listening to the broadcast via WBIX. And I want to very much thank the folks at WBIX for making these arrangements and making this meeting really a public meeting. Thank you. Everybody should have a copy of the agenda. Does everybody have a copy of the agenda? And let me pass it around. And people in the audience should also have a copy. If people don't have copies, I don't know where they went. There were like 400 copies made, so they're there. They're in the back. They're in the back, but maybe somebody could go to the back here. Someone's handing them out here. Just raise your hand if you need one, and you'll get it. This is slightly changed from the agenda that had been circulating before. It's pretty much the same, but slightly changed. What I want to do, though, before we get into the business, is just quickly have the people on the board introduce themselves. If people could just say their names and what city they're from, so everybody knows who's here. We'll do that just with the board members, and later on we'll introduce the station managers and the lab chairs. So, Ray, do you want to start? Just grab one of the mics. Just who you are and what city you're from.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Ray LaForest, and I'm from New York City.
My name is George Barnstone. I'm from Lone Star State, Houston, Texas.
All right.
I'm Teresa Allen. I'm from Spring, Texas.
Hi, I'm Jabari Zakia. I'm from Washington, D.C., a WPFW LAB selectee to the board.
Okay.
I'm Janice K. Bryant from New York City.
I'm David Fisig. I'm the appointee from the local advisory board at KPFK Southern California. And I welcome the board to the first meeting in Los Angeles in 4 years.
Oh,
Hi, I'm Pete Branson from Berkeley, California.
Okay. Let me just say there are several other board members. Carol Spooner should have been here already, so maybe she's stuck in traffic. She should be arriving any moment, I hope. Rob Robinson will be arriving later this evening, probably after the session is over, and we'll be here for the proceedings of the rest of the weekend. Bert Lee is unable to attend, and James Ferguson is unable to attend, and Dick Gregory we haven't heard from, and I believe will not be attending. So here we are. Just wanted to fill you all in. I also, just for the record, want to make it clear, want to make it known, that we did make an effort when we found out at the last minute that two of the board members weren't going to be coming, James Ferguson and Bert Lee. We looked into the possibility of having them attend the meeting via speakerphone. But because it was very much at the last minute, there was not enough time to make the arrangements to get the extra phone line in here. So we were not able to do that. But I do want that noted, that that effort was made, and that they are aware of that. What we need to do is, everybody hopefully has a copy of the agenda in front of them. As I said, there were some minor changes made from what you've seen earlier, and I just want to quickly explain that we modified it a little bit in terms of moving to this evening a section, hopefully 45 minutes, for some community comments. Originally, there wasn't going to be any tonight, and moved the section on affiliates to Sunday in order to accommodate that. And we did that, that is, open up some time tonight, in order to also give us more time tomorrow morning to focus in and to hear from people in the Southern California area on issues related to KPFK. And we felt that since we are here in Los Angeles, that it made sense to open up a larger chunk of time for those concerns to be aired. So that's the major change in the agenda. The other change in the agenda is on Saturday afternoon, points 5 and 6 were just reversed. I'm sorry, 6 and 7. Point 6 is the search and hire of station managers, permanent station managers, a discussion of the process for doing that, and point 7 would be a report from the Executive Director Search Committee. We just reversed the order of those two. And then finally, the last change, as I said already, was to put the affiliate discussion to Sunday morning. Otherwise, the agenda is the same as you saw earlier. I'd like to see if there's a, well, first of all, if there are any problems or alterations that people want to make on this agenda. If not, I want to see if there's a motion to accept. Oh, I'm sorry. Somebody asked me to also indicate Marion Barry's presence or not. He's not here yet. As far as I know, he is coming. He may be coming later this evening as well and joining us tomorrow. I haven't heard that he's not coming, so we are expecting him. So, back to the agenda. Are there any modifications on it people want to make?
Madam Chair, are you saying there?
Madam Chair, there she goes again. Yeah.
Are you saying that there's no archives report at all?
No, there is an archives report.
Okay.
Tonight there will be a report from the archives. We just moved the affiliate discussion to Sunday.
Okay. Okay. I move that we accept the agenda changes.
Okay. And is
second
it a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Can we move right to a vote? Okay, all in favor, just raise your hands. I don't think we need a roll call vote on this. And is there any opposition? No, it's unanimous. Until Carol comes, could somebody serve as secretary to at least record the votes? I don't think there's going to be any more votes, actually, but to record that vote, could somebody just make a record of it? Thank you, Ray. Okay. So that is, we have adopted the agenda. Let me just point out that should there come a time during the weekend when we want to modify this agenda, we will need a two-thirds vote to do so. Otherwise, we will move through this agenda in as orderly and focused a fashion as we can. Let me also remind the members of the board that we are operating under a unique set of rules mandated by the settlement agreement. And that is, we are seeking two-thirds or balanced majority votes in order to move forward on motions or resolutions that are put before us. Resolutions or motions that get a simple majority, but neither a balanced majority or two-thirds, will go to the judge to see if they stand or not. Those are the rules that we are operating on. We also operate under Robert's Rules of Order, sort of my version of Robert's Rules of Order, and try and do that in as open and fair a way as possible. I also want to point out in terms of the agenda that for people who are here and who will be here throughout the weekend, there are a number of times throughout the weekend when there are, is opportunity for community comments. If you know that you want to speak to a particular item and it's on the agenda, that's when you should sign up. There will be sign-up sheets, and in fact, there's a sign-up sheet for tonight's community comment. Marty, who's standing up over here to my right, to your left, raise your hand, Marty, wave up and down. If you're interested in signing up tonight, please do so with Marty so we can do those comments in an orderly way. And when we take the comments, we're going to ask people to try and speak for 2 minutes each. There may be some variation on that. Some people may be given a little more time, but we want to get a lot of voices heard. Yes.
Explain the...
Oh, also, one thing. Everyone needs to speak right into the microphone, not only for amplification here, but also for the recording and for the webcast and for everything else. So get right up into the mic.
Could you explain to us, should things come into question around parliamentary procedure, please?
Yes, I'm sorry. Thank you very much. I want to also introduce everybody to Ted Weisgal, who's sitting right behind me, who is our parliamentarian. And he's volunteering his services. He was with us at our last meeting in New York and proved to be a great asset to the meeting and very helpful. And we hope that we don't have to turn to him at all during the meeting, but he is here. And he also has provided to everyone on the board a sheet that you should have right in front of you, a basic outline of the most basic procedures that we will be operating with. So that's all here. Again, just to be clear...
Another proud citizen of the Lone Star State.
Yes, from Texas also. The parliamentarian is... The function of the parliamentarian is to help the chair do my work, do her work in this instance. So when I feel it is necessary, I will call on the parliamentarian for guidance and input and advice. So that this is Ted... And we welcome him and thank him for his service this weekend. Thank you. Okay. Let me see. I guess Carol has not arrived yet. So, because the next order of business had to do with the adoption of previous minutes, meeting minutes. So I think we should skip that item and go on to the next item, if that's okay with everybody, which is a... just a little report from me, a little few comments from me, and I will try and keep this very brief, but there are a few things I do want to say. One, let me again thank David Furtick, our board representative from Los Angeles, and all the other folks in L.A. who did a tremendous amount of work to make sure that this meeting could happen. I don't think people quite know what all the work is unless you do it yourself. There are a lot of details that need to come together in an orderly way, and David coordinated all that, and we thank you, David. And also the school and the school district, we want to thank them very much for letting us use this facility. It makes these meetings a lot more comfortable to be in a facility like this. And again, I want to thank WBIX and all the technical people who are helping with the webcast and also with tomorrow and Sunday's radio broadcast. The folks here at KPFK who help with that, Larry Bensky is going to anchor the broadcast tomorrow, and the other folks whose names I don't even know who are helping out. We very much want to thank them for helping us make the commitment to fulfill the commitment that these meetings be open and accessible to people, even those people who aren't here physically with us. So thank you. And also we want to thank those people who are listening. It's when I was thinking about what I wanted to say here at this moment that I have, I realized, it dawned on me, that it really has been just a little more than 2 months since the interim board had its first meeting on December 29th. It feels like a little more than 2 years, but in fact, it's only been a little more than 2 months. And I know that I and all of us on the board and at the five stations in the LABs, in the activist community, feel a tremendous sense of urgency to really get further along in the process of rebuilding this network, rebuilding each of these five stations and rebuilding this whole network. We all come to this meeting, I believe, sharing that sense of urgency. That's why we're here. But I think we need to put some perspective on this. We have done in a little more than two months an amazing amount of work already. And I think I'm not going to go into a lot of detail because through the reports and the discussion that you'll hear tonight and throughout the whole weekend, there'll be a lot more depth to that. But just quickly to rattle off the things that I remember, we've had at four of our stations extremely successful fund drives. Extremely successful fund drives. And this is not merely an important financial matter, which it is a very important financial matter. It is also an extremely important political statement that the listeners at all of these stations are making. By lending their financial support, they are saying loud and clear, not only to those of us who are doing this work, but to our enemies as well, to those who want us to not succeed. They are sending the donors, the people who make those pledges, and then for those of you who are listening, the people who fulfill those pledges and send in that money, you are sending a loud and clear political message that this is the direction that you want this network to move into. This is a very important accomplishment. On top of that, we pulled off, thanks to the hard work at all five stations, a day that I think has never been done in broadcast history, certainly not in our history, a day of nationally coordinated programming on all five stations in order to raise money to save the signal here in Los Angeles to make sure that that transmitter project is completed. And we raised that money. And we raised that money because people around the network understand the importance of being part of the network, understand what solidarity really is. And we raised that money because people understand what it means to have a signal that can reach virtually all of Southern California. And we raised that money because people did quality programming. And that's what it's all about. So, again, everybody who was at all involved in that effort, a big round of applause. You really did an amazing thing. There also, in this little more than 2 months, have been significant changes in the management at several of our stations. And what this does, and the way this was done, it was not done in a vindictive, vengeful manner. It was done in the spirit of opening up space for new leadership to take hold during this new period of the rebuilding of this foundation. So it's not just that it happened, but the way it has happened, it is happening. A very, very positive development. We have been fortunate in these last two and a little more months to have a national staff hard at work who inherited a nightmare of a national office, and they are actually making sense out of things. They're actually finding the files and finding the records and putting systems into place. No small feats. Not unrelated to that, we have in this period of time finally begun in a very serious way the uncovering and the understanding of the real financial picture of this foundation. We'll hear a lot more about that this weekend. We knew we were in trouble. We didn't know how serious it was. But again, due largely to the work of our national staff, but to many other people as well, we have begun to understand and starting to get a handle not only on the crisis, but what we're going to do to move beyond this crisis, to not let it get the best of us, but for us to control it. We have moved in very significant ways to strengthen the role of the local advisory boards. And one very important part of that was to help in the reestablishment of positive relationships in those places, and there were quite a few around the network, where any kind of relationship between the station management and the labs had virtually broken down. Those relationships are being rebuilt very carefully, often painfully, but they are being rebuilt. And that's a very, very critical process that is underway and will lead to other developments. And finally, we have built on and further reinvigorated our listeners. It was the listeners that carried us to the settlements, to the creation of this board. It was the listeners that gave us the wherewithal to do this work. In turn, by doing this work, I believe we are reinvigorating and recommitting the listener activist community in all these five cities. That's just a very brief description of some of the work that's happened in a little more than 2 months. It is amazing. We face tremendous challenges. We need to build on that work, and there's whole areas, new areas of work that we have to take up, many of which we will start this weekend. The process of reviewing and revising the bylaws and the governance structures and the policies of this organization. We will begin to get a handle on how to do that work this weekend. The process of creating elected local advisory boards at all five stations. We will begin that process and build on the process that was already begun in Berkeley, but we will begin to figure out how we're going to make that happen in the four other stations this weekend. We are moving into the phase of actually developing the ways to bring democratic and accountable and transparent structures to this organization. That is a big challenge, but we're on the road to doing that. We also, parallel to that, as we do that, we continue to face an extremely serious financial crisis. And we're going to hear a lot more about that tonight and through the weekend. It's not that one of these issues is any more important than the other. If we don't address all of them, we're not going to succeed in any of them. They all go together. Our job as this national board is not to do all of that work, is not to make the decisions about all of that, is not to figure out all those challenges, but rather to set up the processes in each of the five listening areas and on a network-wide level. The processes that include our paid staff, our non-paid staff, the local advisory board members, and the listening community, how do we bring all those folks into the processes to deal with these things? That is the major challenge that this board has, not to decide everything, but to open up and make transparent and accountable the process by which those decisions are made. So it is with all of that that I am delighted that we are meeting, that this meeting opens on International Women's Day. I turned on the news earlier on the TV. Big mistake, I know. Okay, I turned on CNN. Sorry, I'm a CNN junkie still. I turned it on, and there was Laura Bush speaking to the United Nations about women in Afghanistan. I'm sorry, but I almost vomited. And I thought about, and she was speaking there today in recognition of International Women's Day. And I thought about how different it is that she is there at the UN and we are here doing this work in honor of the working women, that's who I'm honoring today, that this holiday the struggles of working women that this holiday represents and celebrates every year. And it is our, I think, out of our respect for working women in this country and around the world, that is part of what drives us to rebuild this institution, to make this a democratic media outlet. Because we understand how important that struggle is to the lives of all people, and all people not only in this country, but around the world. And it is in that context that I just want to remind us that what we are really about, what I believe this struggle is really about building an organization that understands its role in the progressive social change movement. That it's not just about five stations, it's about changing the lives of people everywhere in this world and the role that we play in that. So, in that context, I hope that we will work hard this weekend. I know we will work hard. But I also want to suggest that part of our work as we move forward in this rebuilding phase is to understand in ways that I don't think we always do what gender oppression is, what sexism is. And that means that we need to think about that when we think about our programming, when we think about our governance structures, when we think about our staffing, when we think about who gets elected to the LABs, and that this has to move beyond tokenism. We have to move into a much more thorough understanding, as I think we have begun to move a little bit in terms of our deepening understanding of race and racism and class dynamics. We have to address gender oppression and sexism with the same vigor. And it is appropriate to do that, to start that work tonight, again, in honor and in celebration of International Women's Day. And that's it for me. Thank you. We have been joined by Carol Spooner, who I knew would make it. Thank you, Carol. I don't know, Carol, if you want to take another minute before we come to the question of reviewing the minutes of previous meetings, or do you want to come later?
As I informed the board, I do not have the minutes for the January meeting. I was relying mistakenly and misguidedly upon getting the transcript of the meeting. As a result of our financial crisis, we were not able to pay the transcriptionist. It was $10,000. So we don't have a transcriptionist this meeting. I won't be relying on a transcriptionist. But we did not get the transcript until 2 days before I was to take the California bar exam. So I beg your indulgence. I did come back from the bar exam and make an attempt to get it done this week. However, my daughter is gravely ill. And so I apologize to you. And I will have the minutes probably within 10 days after this meeting. We did have, however, after the January meeting in New York, we did have a telephone conference meeting concerning legal matters in executive session. Did everyone on the board receive a copy of those minutes?
They were emailed.
I emailed everyone on the board. Did everyone receive them?
Peter's saying no, but we can email them again.
Is there anyone who did not receive them on the board?
Pete was saying he did.
Pete? All right. Well, do we want to... I brought extra copies. Do we want to have me hand them out tonight and
yeah,
approve
that's
them
what
tomorrow?
I suggest. We can put that into the agenda later in the weekend and come back to that.
All right,
item.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Well, why don't we move along then, in which case we're only 5 minutes late, which is not bad. The next agenda item is a report from our acting executive director, Dan Coughlin. Yeah, maybe somebody could just make some room over there. As he's coming up to the table here, let me just say that we are one lucky group of people to have had Dan be available to step in and do this job. So, and I see also sitting with Dan is Verna Avery Brown, who also we are extremely lucky to have been able to join staff. What we're going to do is hear from them, and then the question and answer period, just so it's clear to folks, is for the board people. Okay, this is not open for everybody. This is for the board to ask whatever questions they have. So, Dan, take it away.
Thank you very much, Leslie. Vernon and I will divide up a little bit our presentation this evening. First of all, let me also thank on behalf of the national staff all of those people who organized this meeting here this weekend. Thank you very much. It's great to come back to Los Angeles. And, of course, special thanks to Dave Fertig for all his hard work and helping to take some of the burden off of us at the national staff. I did want to just introduce briefly to you all here, in case you haven't met all of us, Yasmin Bryan. Please stand up. Yasmin is our interim controller. And Joyce Snowden next to her, our human resources and admin staffer at the national office. And, of course, Verna Avery Brown, who needs no introduction, sitting right next to her. The priorities of the Pacifica National Office, in addition to the day-to-day management of network operations, have been to first get a clear handle on the network's financial situation and to stabilize economically. And secondly, to begin the healing and rebuilding process in each of the five signal areas as mandated by the December legal settlement and recent board resolutions. This includes the urgent need for reconciliation between local advisory boards and local stations in the run-up to lab elections and the bylaw changes that will be happening later on this year. The Pacifica Radio Network is in far worse financial shape than any of us have imagined. Let me be very clear tonight. Pacifica has been and remains on the brink of financial collapse. Every day at the national office and at our five stations, staff are dealing with vendors and creditors banging on our doors. We are living hand-to-mouth, figuring out how to meet payroll and keep the network running for another day. Whether it is a phone bill or a transmitter problem or an angry law firm, we've been thrown into crisis management and will remain so for a long period of time, probably to at least the end of this year. As you all know, the new board and administration inherited a network that faced a $1.5 million budget gap for this calendar year and a $5 million working capital deficit. In addition, as Leslie mentioned, Pacifica's national offices and its professional relations were in total chaos. Our institutional capacity to handle day-to-day operations, let alone a full-blown crisis, were and are extremely limited. While an interim controller was hired and an independent review of the books was conducted, there are no formal accounting procedures and policies in place, and basic systems like accounting software are not functioning properly. To be sure, strengthening Pacifica's financial spine is one of our top priorities over the coming months. Despite these immediate difficulties, we are moving aggressively to tackle the problems, and we've adopted a three-pronged strategy to address what I'm calling Pacifica's special period. The first of these prongs is negotiating the existing debt. Based on the Board of Directors' decision made on the February 15th conference call, we've hired a law firm to bring some order and professionalism to that process, to the largest legal and professional claims now outstanding. And these total about $2 million from some eight professional services firms. Verna is handling that process, and if I could just introduce you now, Verna, to give a little report back on what is happening with that.
Certainly. Good evening. We won. But when Dan first invited me or asked me to join him in this position to take on this, I said, thank you. After having been in this position now for about a month and a half, I say, thank you, I think. Because if he just sort of outlined the scope of this problem, I'm finding every day the depth of the problem, of the crisis, the financial crisis that we're in. The lion's share of the $5 million debt that results from the legal fees incurred during the Bessie Walsh administration comes from legal fees. The lion's share of that debt comes from legal fees. From what I've been able to discern from the invoices that we have on file at the national office, Pacifica had employed a total of 5 major Washington law firms simultaneously in the summer of 2001. Now, I don't personally recall what was going on at that point in the chronology of this struggle, but 5 major law firms at the same time, the heat must have been on. I don't know what you guys were doing, what the campaign was doing, but the heat was definitely on. 5 law firms, a public relations firm, and an investigative firm, all in the summer of 2001. There were a total of 8 or 9 law firms that make up the aggregate of $2 million in debt that we ostensibly owe. It was a classic David versus Goliath battle. Only in this case, David gets to pay for the giant's funeral. So the struggle, this struggle has left Pacifica Foundation with a debt of $2 million from past due legal fees incurred by those who sought but failed to destroy our precious network. Now, in developing a strategy to attack this immense liability, we've retained the services of James Myworm of Squire & Sanders, a Washington-based attorney with experience in debt restructuring and nonprofit organizations. Myworm initially donated several hours of his time in assisting us. However, let's be clear, he is retained, and we have a cap on his services placed at $50,000. We're currently in the process of evaluating and resolving claims asserted by various firms who claim to be creditors of Pacifica. Those firms include Epstein, Becker, and Green, leading the pack with a claim of $557,000. Williams and Connolly, closely followed with a claim of $466,477.28. Mitchell, Silverberg, and Knut, $296,000 and some change. Fulbright and Jaworski, $228,000 and some change. Garvey, Schubert, and Vera, $53,000. Wendell, Rosen, Black, and Dean, $34,000. The law offices of Paul Clevin, $13,000. Hinton, Sussman, Bailey, and Davidson, $10,000. Littman, Ash, and Gioeli at $8,500. And the public relations firm of West Hill, $285,000. The one that I find really the most despicable of all is Decision Strategy. What is that? That's an innocuous sounding name for a spy firm, basically, that invoiced us for $230,000. Dan will have more on that a little bit later, on what they did, when they did it, and what they found. Now, we fully intend to honor any debts that our predecessors legally incurred. Our strategy is to pay as little as possible in as long a time as allowable. And I don't want to go into any more detail on that, but as per a status report from Jim Myworm in the initial stages of the evaluation, we're investigating the following issues. What is claimed to be owed by Pacifica? Who did the firm in question purport to represent? What did the firm do and when? Was indemnification with respect to the amounts allegedly due properly authorized? Were the activities taken by the firm authorized? And is the cost of the claim asserted by the firm possibly covered in whole or in part by insurance? Well, we also instructed Myworm to investigate which debts, if they can, should be completely forgiven. Myworm has already met with the National Board's Finance Committee to update it and confer on possible contacts within any of the firms that might be able to use their personal persuasion to minimize balances through personal negotiations. More on that later. In addition to evaluating and resolving the legal claims, we've instructed Myworm to explore the possibility of ascertaining loans against our mortgages at KPFT, KPFK, and KPFA. He's already begun that process. We can say we have some reason for early optimism. So
before I close, let me just answer what, in preparing this report, I thought might be three questions lingering on your minds about this situation. Question number one, do we really have to pay these scumbags $2 million of our precious dollars? The answer, yes. But we're in the process of negotiating down those claims, and we're looking closely at the invoices to see where unnecessary or double billing may have occurred. Mayworm is examining the question of conflict of interest on the part of former board member John Murdoch, who hired his firm, Epstein, Becker, and Green, to represent Pacifica, although I will say, unfortunately, that initially it appears there's no conflict as long as there was full disclosure. But we haven't closed that chapter yet. We're looking and continuing to research that matter, and we're uncovering a batch of documents and memos and board meetings that we're hopeful might support any improprieties that might exist in that relationship. Mayworm says there's a reasonable chance that some of that debt will be negotiated away. Question number two. Where are we in the process of making this disappear from our lives so that we can be about the business of radio and not paying off law firms inside the Beltway? Answer, in the very early stages. We're in no particular rush to start doling out $2 million, so we're moving forward, well, let's just say, deliberately. Letters have been sent out from Squires and Sanders asking the firms to update us on their claims. A few have responded, saying, we've already invoiced you several times, but we'll do it again. So they're willing to work with us, and there's no evidence they're organizing against us at this time. Question number three, is it possible we can get the insurance company to pay out a higher rate than the $200 that we're currently scheduled, that they're currently scheduled to pay out? Answer, well, maybe. The insurance company is under the impression that Pacifica agreed to pay any difference in rates that exceeded the $200 per hour rate. The question now becomes, if Pacifica did, under the Bessie Warsh administration, agree to such terms, is there a document supporting that agreement? And if not, do we try to push the insurance company to pay out what is considered a more reasonable rate, something closer to the $400 per hour that we were being billed? So in closing, it appears we have several viable options that can help steer us out of this fiscal quagmire, but there are no quick fixes. This is a matter that will require delicate negotiations, time, and patience, but we are confident that we will win this in the end. We're fighters, and we're not going to let this final hurdle trip us up now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Verna. That is prong number one in our three-prong strategy. The second thing that we're doing to try to restore some kind of financial stability to the network is to cut costs. We have taken already a number of aggressive steps to balance our budget for this calendar year. We closed down the network news operations on February 15th and reorganized the KU satellite systems. We have also cut back sharply on salaries for national management and general managers. In fact, salary cuts for top managers have ranged from 32% to 10% and 5%. But overall, the focus of our cuts have been at the national level. Our local stations are the heart of the network, and we will do all we can to preserve our local stations. Thirdly, we need to raise revenue. And as Leslie mentioned, as a result of the December's legal settlement and the dropping of the listener boycott by community groups across the country, Pacifica Radio posted its highest ever winter fundraising drive in history, generating nearly $3 million in on-air pledges at four stations. Listeners at WBAI in the New York tri-state area led the surge, doubling the amount given during last year's winter drive. Both KPFA and KPFK hit a historic high fundraising marks, and during its programming time slot, Democracy Now! Raised an incredible $630,000. All five stations as you heard, participated in the historic one-day nationwide solidarity drive to help repair KPFK's transmitter, which is presently at reduced power. That raised about $180,000 in on-air pledges and generated a day of riveting national programming. And the response was so positive that we will be doing some more programming of this kind in the months and I'm sure years ahead. We will be launching in the near future a comprehensive fundraising campaign that will include direct mail drops, the targeting of high donors, on-air fundraising, and special events. And as Verna mentioned, we are also looking at ways we can leverage Pacifica's real estate assets. But the reality is that even with this record fund drive, Pacifica must still raise $1.5 million between now and May 15th just to cover operational costs and salaries across the network. And between May 15th and October 15th, we will have to raise another $2 million in addition to our normal on-air fund drives. This is the gravity of the situation today. That is, between now and October 15th, we have to figure out how to raise about $3.5 million. So how do we do this? Well, everybody in the Pacifica community must become a fundraiser. Every lab member, every national board member, every Pacifica worker and listener. Today, this task must be the number one priority for all of us associated with the network. Save Pacifica committees or Save Our Station committees can be created throughout the country, and every listener can be urged to become an organizer and recruit 5 or 10 new members. We need to organize in the streets, at community meetings, in churches, and trade unions. We can and must organize huge fundraising events in New York, California, Texas, Washington, D.C., Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Connecticut, and bring in named musicians and speakers. The same mass movement that has brought the promise of democracy to this network can save the network by independently raising hundreds of thousands of dollars in a few short months. And we believe that this strategy relies on our greatest strength, the thousands of Pacifica listeners and the spirit of solidarity and volunteerism that has shaped this network for more than 50 years. It will mobilize people into action. It will force us to organize and expand the base of our membership, and it will pave the way for a greater voter base in the democratic elections of advisory boards that must be accomplished within the next year. One important way to mobilize listeners at this level would be through a mass education campaign where we explain in detail exactly how Pacifica got into this mess in the first place. As the Independent Financial Review of Pacifica's books revealed, the previous administration went on a reckless and irresponsible $6 million spending spree in a 15-month period. And not just because of the exorbitant fees paid to and charged by legal firms. Senior managers, we're seeing evidence now, treated the network like a trough. Let me give you some examples. In the first 6 months of 2001, for instance, one top manager racked up an American Express bill of nearly $120,000 on travel expenses alone. And on their way out the door, these managers handed out exorbitant golden parachute severance packages to themselves and their staff without any regard, as far as we can tell, to professional standards. Upon leaving Pacifica, one former executive charged up huge hotel bills and absconded with a rental car, saddling the network with thousands of dollars in bills. We, in fact, had to call the police and report the car stolen in order to get it back. And to this day, some former officials believe the gravy train is still flowing, and they continue to demand huge sums from the network, like more than $100,000 to leave and not sue Pacifica. In total, some 20 severance packages were handed out over the last year at an expense of nearly $500,000 to the network, if not more. We believe these were improper, and they have all been halted pending a review and a renegotiation. Most alarmingly, I also want to report to you and the entire Pacifica community that the former administration apparently committed hundreds of thousands of listener dollars on an undercover intelligence operation targeting Pacifica staffers and listeners. Secret dossiers were apparently created on programmers like Amy Goodman, on board members like Leslie Kagan, and on listener activists. Undercover agents were reportedly dispatched to spy on local advisory board meetings and on community events. Internet news groups and websites were closely monitored, and liaisons were established with local police forces. It is imperative that some kind of independent review of the files from the last 2 years be conducted, a kind of truth commission, if you will, to ascertain exactly what happened and why. At the very least, there must be some review of what appears to be an extensive surveillance operation, and appropriate steps must be taken to properly handle the information gathered from these activities. Our challenge is to figure out how to learn from the problems and weaknesses of the past so we can develop safeguards, so we can, as well as developing new governance structures and new commitments to mission-driven programming. And also, if we are asking for ongoing financial support from our Pacifica communities and from our listeners, we need to be completely transparent with the wider Pacifica community about why. You will all be hearing more about what is happening at Pacifica's five stations tomorrow, but one key development we have prioritized at the national level has been the reintegration of the local advisory boards at our stations, especially KPFK, KPFT, WBAI, and WPFW. This process has raised a series of key questions on the bylaw changes and on upcoming lab elections. Another key issue that has emerged during this period of healing and reconciliation has been programming. How do local Pacifica stations articulate Pacifica's mission in their day-to-day programming? What are the structures and processes that inform programming? There is widespread debate, often sharp, as we've all experienced in the last few weeks, on the nature of community radio in the 21st century, and indeed on the very purpose and direction of Pacifica programming. We welcome that debate, and now is precisely the time to organize a national discussion on the issue. As a start, and I know there are many different initiatives around the country, Verna and I are setting up a commission to look at Pacifica programming and the programming process, what we are calling a mission commission. The commission will be empowered to organize a network-wide discussion on structure and programming within and among the Pacifica community and those who are rooted in, as well as those who are rooted in progressive social movements and in community radio nationwide. We believe the ideas generated by this process will help encourage, focus, inform, and strengthen the general debate on Pacifica's future, as well as providing concrete programming ideas for the network as we move forward in this new democratic era. Verna and I have asked longtime programmer and former Pacifica board member Robbie Osman to help us coordinate this effort in an unpaid capacity. We've asked him to establish panels of respected progressive organizers and activists to report to the labs, to report to the national board, to report to the station staff, and the national office on these questions facing Pacifica. We hope that out of this period of crisis and upheaval within the network, we will be able to salvage a unique opportunity to take a careful look at how our institutional culture and our decision-making structure affect how successfully our programming serves the network's mission. We will also be taking additional initiatives around these questions, and I know the board will be addressing this matter, some of these initiatives, this weekend. In terms of day-to-day operations at the network, we are all working hard to reestablish some critical network functions. The KPFK transmitter work on Mount Wilson, for example, is a top priority for us. Our best estimate, after hearing from Southern California Edison and Los Angeles County officials, is that KPFK will be at low power until maybe mid-May and even perhaps June. The FCC will be asked for a third extension to allow this work to be completed. Since the delays were out of our immediate control, it will likely be no problem obtaining another extension on our special temporary operating authority. Another key area of operations that this new administration has moved quickly to reestablish are Pacifica's subcarrier licenses. I regret to report that between June and December of last year, no revenue was generated from Pacifica's 10 subcarrier frequencies at our five stations. As far as we can tell, contracts were just sitting around the national office unsigned, and we have already got five leases fully activated in what is a weak SCA market, bringing in some $35,000 a month. Fully leased, we expect a revenue of about $900,000 a year. I'm also pleased to report that Pacifica's affiliate stations are returning, and I know you'll be hearing more about this later, and largely, of course, this is due to the legal settlement and the return of Democracy Now! A total of 51 affiliates, as far as we understand, still remain with the network, and we are very pleased that many have been spontaneously sending in checks and renewing their affiliation. As these examples show, Pacifica is coming back. Staff, community, and board members are pulling together to bring this network into a new and historic period in the United States media, the first national broadcast network to be democratically run. This is an exciting time, and it was best exemplified by the Save Our Signal Day of solidarity with the Southern California and KPFK listener community. But we cannot make these internal changes without actively engaging the world around us. Today, on International Working Women's Day, 64 people were killed in Israel and the occupied territories. I think the single most deadliest day since the Al-Aqsa Intifada began 14 months ago. Not only does this underscore the urgent need, once again, for Pacifica to redouble its commitment to peace and social justice programming, but it also reminds us that for Pacifica to be able to successfully change internally, we must actively engage with the historical events and processes and debates that are shaping the world today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you both, Dan and Verna. I just want to see if anybody on the board has questions or comments. George, again, speak right into the microphone, George.